You hate to get up at the wrong time. It is good to be with you. I think it's been a few years. I know my wife hasn't aged, but I have, since we've been up here last, and certainly feel like we owe you a huge debt of gratitude. We sent our son up here, and Dave Ingalls is supposed to be working on an invoice for me. He told me tonight he was coming up with a detailed invoice, and I said, just send us a big number. That's kind of what we're expecting. But we sent Drew up here to enjoy your fellowship and the corn, which appears to be appealing to him fairly well. He's making it. One of them shucked out to be a beautiful blonde. And I think it was her brother-in-law that said she was the corn queen. But actually, we think she's the queen of our hearts. We're just thrilled to death with Courtney and Drew's decision. And we're excited to be included in the Peenick family, Lord willing, one of these days. I think it was Mark out in the foyer that I heard him say there was an elephant in the room, or somebody did. And there indeed is. Many of us are worn out and a little bit tired. I'll try not to belinger this too long tonight, but just simply share the message that I decided to give when Lowell called. And it wasn't long after that we learned about Clint and his situation and his passing. But I've really been thrilled with watching the brotherhood come together and rejoice in that young man's life. And I can tell you that not only my generation has lost, but I think these folks' generation has lost a lot, and there's going to have to be several step up and fill that hole, because that young man was capable of some wonderful things and had already begun to prove it. Tonight I've got a word association game for you, just briefly, and I'd like for you to participate if you would. We associate places sometimes with people, and they tend to be famous. Let me give you an example. If I was to say, and this is on a world, I'm not talking about Waterloo, Iowa. I think there is one of those. But if I was to say Waterloo, is there any person in particular in history that might be related to Waterloo? Come on, I can't hear you. Napoleon, sure, yeah. He learned a lot at Waterloo, didn't he? And so we kind of tie that to his situation. What about the Little Bighorn? Anybody's name come to mind? Little Bighorn. Custer, yeah. He didn't get to gain too much out of that lesson, did he? I think Napoleon got more than Custer did out of that deal. What about Gettysburg? Anybody in particular? Lincoln? Okay, yeah, Abe Lincoln. Wonderful Gettysburg Address. One that's a little closer to home for us, Hannibal, Missouri. Anybody? Mark Twain, yeah, sure. And next to last here, what about, I told Laura, I said, how did I miss Valley Forge? Valley Forge, who do you tie with that? George Washington, sure, okay. And then the last one I've got for you is a town called Dothan. How we doing? Dothan? Dothan? Oh, my. Dothan. Well, now, everybody knows that Dothan is just a little town south of Nazareth, probably about 16 miles, something like that. Some famous things occurred there, actually. Dothan is on the Great Trunk Road. And the Great Trunk Road ran from over in Macedonia, about at Babylon, came down through the Canaan land area, and went on down into Egypt. This was a very commonly traveled road. And the situation of the roads the Romans had accomplished and other societies before established this network of roads so that travel could be accomplished, and of course, preparation of the way for Christ, so the gospel could be spread. But Dothan is a place that I'm sure you'll remember as I give you a little bit of history here. There was a young man, oh, maybe 16, 17 years old. His dad had made him kind of a special coat. Had many colors, and his brothers weren't too keen on that coat. For some reason, they thought either they should have had one, I don't know. But there's a little bit of jealousy there, if you'll recall. One day that the young man, I'm sure, was just kind of hanging around house, helping out, Dad says, why don't you go on down and check on your brothers? I'm sure they're down there someplace. And it's just interesting that, to note that Dothan is in an area that's probably the most cultivated part of the Promised Land. One of the richest fertile valleys is right there, the Dothan Valley. And so the brothers had gone off to Shechem, if you remember. They had gone to Shechem and they had taken their flock there, and they were allowing them to graze. And they moved on from Shechem, if you recall. Well, Joseph came to Shechem looking for his brothers. And he was asking around town, saying, well, no, they're not here anymore. They've gone on to Dothan. It's interesting, as I think he was wearing the coat, so it would seem. And as he topped the hill there, just outside Dothan, some of his brothers saw him. And their conclusion was, the best way to handle this young man is just to go ahead and kill him. Now, there must have been some pretty hard feelings there. Must have been a rough family to live in, I would guess. But anyway, there was an awful lot of jealousy. Some family dysfunction, if you will. And so as he got closer, the plan changed. And there was a little pit in Dothan. And it wasn't too long before Joseph found himself at the bottom of it. His brothers had opted to throw him in there. And I don't think they really had a plan other than that they wanted to just get rid of him. I want you to go with me for just a second to the bottom of that pit. You're a 16, 17-year-old young man, probably the favorite of your father at the time. Might have been pampered a little bit. Life had been good. And God had revealed some special things to you. Now, this was probably part of the problem, because God had allowed a couple dreams to come to Joseph. One dream, if you remember, about the shucks. And then the other dream that he had, that the sun, moon, and stars, and his position relative to others in the family. And the brothers resented this and caused a hatred. So here he is in the bottom of the pit, looking up. Brothers hate him. Doesn't have a cell phone, so he can't call Dad. Things are looking pretty bleak in Dothan. It's interesting when you look at Joseph's sons. His firstborn was named, this is participatory, tell me who his firstborn son was. Try it again. I believe it was Manasseh. Joseph's firstborn, Manasseh. Joseph's firstborn was Manasseh, and Manasseh means, for God made me forget all my toil in my father's house. His secondborn was Ephraim. And Ephraim means, for God has caused me fruitful in the land of my affliction. Now, we know the rest of the story, don't we? We know how the story turns out. Joseph is sold to a caravan coming down the great trunk road. And they are on their way to Egypt, as was pretty common. From there, Joseph's life takes some pretty interesting turns, doesn't it? But you know, it's interesting as we look at Joseph. Can you think of a sin that's recorded against Joseph in the Bible? Can you think of a bad situation that Joseph had gotten himself into in the Bible? Now you can say, well, in the house there, Potiphar's house, maybe he shouldn't have gotten so close to the wife or something like that. Joseph is, in my mind, is in a pretty special category. Pretty special category. A young man that had some really, really tough starts and actually ended up in prison, if you recall, in Egypt. And yet his faith in God doesn't seem to waver. But he sure could have given up in the pit in Dothan, couldn't he? He could have turned against God. He could have decided that this was God's will for him. He could have decided that this was an insurmountable hill. And why would God subject him to anything like that? We don't read anything like that in Joseph's thinking. We read of Dothan again about 1,050 years later. There's a king, King Assyria, 2 Kings, the 6th chapter. This king is really frustrated. He's gathered all of his consorts around him, and he's waging war against Israel. And he makes this great plan, you know, this great strategy. We're going to do this, and we're going to do that. And it isn't long that the Israelite army has positioned themselves in a perfect position against his plan. And so he goes back to his leaders, and he says, well, which of you are for the Israelites? And their answer was, none of us. Actually, there's a guy named Elisha, and he can tell you what's said in the confidence of your bedroom. And he's the one that's telling the king of Israel. He's the one that's informing the king of Israel of all of our moves. And so the king of Syria had had enough. Let's go get him. Where do you think Elisha is? Well, we're pretty sure he's in this town in the valley of Dothan. So he goes on out, and he brings a major majority of his army, horsemen, chariot, and they surround Dothan. And this is done at night, under the cover of night. And so when the city wakes up in the morning, they're surrounded by an amazing army. They had the ability to just crush them and wipe them out. Well, that would be, I don't know that you've ever been in that situation. I haven't. I would think that'd be fairly desperate. That an army that was out to kill you had surrounded your town. And Elisha had a little servant that had come along with him. And as they woke up and walked out to the front of the city gates, and they looked around and they saw this army. And Elisha's servant was distressed. Our lives are going to be required of us. And Elisha in 2 Kings 6:16 says, so Elisha answered his servant, was so concerned, do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. And Elisha prayed and said, Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses, chariots of fire all around the town. I like Matthew Henry as he kind of paraphrases this for us and then gives us a couple thoughts. His paraphrase on that is, Lord, open his eyes of faith, that with them he may see the protection that we're under. The greatest kindness we can do for those that are fearful or faint-hearted is to pray for them and so recommend them to the mighty grace of God. And secondly, to open our eyes that it will silence our fears. In the dark, we are most apt to be frightened. The clearer sight that we have of the sovereign power of heaven, the less we shall fear the calamities of this earth. The chariots of fire were there all the time. The limit was in the servant's perception. Brethren, have you ever been to Dothan? Have you ever been to Dothan? It's a tough town. There's been some pretty hard things happen in Dothan. In Psalms 119 and 37, the writer there says, turn away my eyes from looking at worthless things and revive me in your way. Proverbs 4:25 admonishes, look your eyes straight ahead and your eyelids looking before you. Ponder the path of your feet and let all your ways be established. Do not turn to the right. Do not turn to the left. Remove your foot from evil. And Isaiah gives us this admonition. He who walks righteously and speaks uprightly, he who despises the gain of oppressions, whose gestures with his hands refuses bribes, who stops his ears from hearing of bloodshed and shuts his eyes from seeing evil, he will dwell on the high, and his place will be the defense of the fortress of the rocks. They will see, I'm sorry, your eyes will see the king and his beauty, and they will see the land that is afar off. Drew got all the artistic talent in our family, as far as I know. But I hope you can figure out what that is. Brethren, when we go to Dothan, and many of us went there this week, it's just ironic that I had picked this topic and had developed it before Clint's passing. But I've seen this executed very, very well this week. You see, when tragedy and disaster comes into our lives, we have a couple ways we can go. And I've seen it happen both directions. I remember when I was a young man, there was a fella and his wife that had been married for many years and they'd never had a child. We had to work together for three or four years, as I recall. And they just loved a boat. And they had an old Thunderbird, Ford Thunderbird. It was baby blue, and they were real proud of that. And then they had a matching boat behind it. And they'd put that little one in the back seat of the car, and they'd go out to the lake. And then they'd go boating. Everybody looked just picture perfect. It was a wonderful situation. It looked like a wholesome family. And one day, the husband and wife had backed the boat down in the boat ramp. Those of you that are fishermen, you know exactly what I'm talking about. They had backed the boat down in the boat ramp, and they'd thrown the Thunderbird in the park, and they'd both jumped out to put the boat, release it, and put the boat into the water. Well, the husband had not gotten it in the park. It was actually in reverse. And as they got out, the car and the trailer went right on down into the water with a little bit of energy behind it. Well, that baby was killed just pretty much instantly. It was interesting to watch that relationship as the blames begin to fly. As the challenges, the charges, well, it was your responsibility. No, you're the one that didn't get it in the park. And it was a very public thing. We were all aware. It wasn't but a couple months and it was a divorce. That was the end of it. They had gone to Dothan and they'd stayed and died in the pit. When you go to Dothan, how do you handle it? I know enough of you here to know that you've been to Dothan maybe once or twice. How's the jaw? Let's turn to Ephesians, the fourth chapter. I think Paul here is going to help us a little bit with understanding when we go to Dothan, how we handle it. Ephesians, the fourth chapter, 17th verse. This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk. Now, who's he talking about there, the Gentiles? Well, I think for the most part, I don't know all of you, but I suspect there's not many Jews here. But I believe that in the context of this, maybe we could define a Jew, as Paul defines it in Romans. Not all Israel is Israel. You're familiar with that? But we are of Father Abraham through faith. And so we are, in a way, Jews of faith. And so in this context, I think the Gentiles is more talking about the world, isn't it? Those of the world, the futility of the world. The rest of the Gentiles walk in the futility of their mind. The futility of the mind. It's an amazing place to go in and wander around because we get full of ourselves. We get sure of the knowledge that we have. You know, we go off, and not that college is a bad thing. I've spent a couple hours in college before. But we go off and we gain this knowledge, and we just get full of that. And before you know it, you're approaching the wisdom that James talks about that's futile. You get so full of yourself that you don't need the wisdom of God, the understanding that's there. You're acting as if you're a part of a heathen nation. It's a vanity. It's a futility in thinking. In fact, this means actually, the Greek on this is actually a moral depravity. A moral depravity. You ever thought your mind had gone there? In verse 18, he says, having their understanding darkened. A darkened understanding. Brethren, how do we get a darkened understanding? I think it's easy to define that when we define the source of light. If we define the source of light and we say this is a darkened understanding, then we know where the mind is. It's away from Christ. It's away from the truth. And so this becomes a darkened knowledge or understanding. And we're alienated from the life of God. What is it like to be alienated from the life of God? I can tell you the world really doesn't care. They really don't care. I can give you an excellent example of that. Our business changed hands here just about 3 years ago, and I no longer work for a good friend of mine. I work for a fellow that is definitely of the world and full of himself, full of his own knowledge. I had a young man that works for me that had some pretty major life challenges, and he had had some victories. And in fact, in a way, he had found Christ. I use that term very loosely. He and I spent a lot of time together and we tried to consider the rest of the truth. But anyway, he was excited about this, how he'd turned his life around. And so he wanted to go into the owner's office and share this exciting news that he was doing a lot better, that he was thrilled that his life was finally on the right rails. And as he was sharing this with the owner looked back at him. I can tell you this man is not a good leader of people. Because his response was, well, you know, if eternity, is standing and singing praises around God's throne, I want nothing to do with it. Well, needless to say, that young man was shattered. We had to talk about that a while. This is what I think it means when it says that it's a darkened understanding. It's alienated from the life that God would have us to have. It's ignorance, as the writer goes on to say. It's an ignorance. Because of the blindness, he says, of their hearts. And the blindness of the hearts, the term that he uses there actually means a calloused stupidity. A calloused stupidity. That means not something that's just superficial, that's just happened. What's it take to get a callous? Over and over and over and over. Maybe some blood in there if you're working it, and before you know it. And so these people layer upon layer upon layer of worthless thinking, become callous in their thinking. Verse 19. Who, being past feeling, wow, how do you get there? Past feeling. You've met people that are past feeling. I want to do what I want to do. I don't care what other people think. Right? Ever met anybody like that? Who, being past feeling, that give themselves over to the lewdness, to work all uncleanness with greediness. How does the world define success? How does the world define success. Well, these are all tools that help them get to that success. And greediness there, he means avarice. He means fraud. He means covetousness. I am first. I am first and foremost. And don't you get in my way. I'm behind here, aren't I? Impurity. Greed. Let's just put of. The world has great promises for us. In this life, we can have all kinds of riches. We can accomplish all kinds of things that make us feel good. Self-fulfilling. In fact, if I'm good enough at that thinking, I can become my own God. I can decide what's right and wrong. And I don't care what you think. These are the things that drive us to world success. But in verse 20, we see Paul here turn the table. But you have not so learned Christ. Now it's important to notice that that learn there is a verb. It's an action thing. It's a happening. You have not understood it that way. You've not understood life that way. That is not the way that Christ tells us to live. In 21, put off the old man. What's that old man look like? Oh, he's got this worldly thing going over here where it fulfills his lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, the pride of life. He's given it all the gusto. If you're only going to go around once, right? Those of you that are old enough to remember that one. Put off the old man that grows corrupt. In 23, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind. Brethren, it's hard to have that surgery. It's tough to have that surgery. Why? Because you're the only one that can accomplish it. You can come to this building week after week after week. You can play church all you want. But the renewing of your mind, seeing the world a different way, is up to you. Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not be ashamed, rightly defining the word of truth. You know, people were just overflowing with commendations for Clint. And how wonderful it was that he was able to defend the gospel so vehemently. I don't know if any of you ever took Clint on, but that was a challenge. And they were amazed at his faith at 19. Well, you know, nobody took a funnel and put it on his ear and pushed it down in there. That young man studied. And not only did he study, but he applied it. He brought it to bear. He made it real in his life, so real that he had an energy about him. He was willing to do what God had called him to do. And guess what? He was doing it. Praise God. How do I get there, Clint? Same way he got there. Study. Preparation. Renewing our mind, as Paul tells us here in 24. 23. 24. You put on a new man. Put on a new man. I'm just going to add study down here in proper context. Created according to God, true righteousness, true holiness. There's lots of good sounding stuff out there now. And don't think this isn't attractive to people. It's very attractive to people. I know one guy that's leading a very large church down in Kansas City. And he was asked the secret of their growth. It's easy. I just don't preach the stuff they don't want to hear. That'd be a good formula. Oh, there's great formulas out there. There's people you can hire that would make you build this building 10 times its size. 10 times its size. You could do some amazing things. But it wouldn't be true, would it? It wouldn't be true righteousness. And when we get to the end of the run, many will say to me, "Lord, Lord, haven't we cast out demons in your name? We looked Christian. We even had your Bible open and we used some of the scriptures. Depart from me, I knew you not." God seeks those that are willing to serve him in spirit and, what's the other one? He goes on in 25 to tell us to speak the truth. We're to speak the truth. I'm just going to put truth down here. Speak the truth. Be angry and sin not, 26. 27, give no place to the devil. No place to the devil. I think what he's getting at there is you have a weak point. Every one of us. And guess who's the expert on that weak point? He's the master. He knows what it is. And just as soon as you expose it, he's going to give you a little suggestion. This time it won't be bad. This time it's okay. People will understand. You deserve it. Ever had those thoughts before? And then after he's got you, after sin occurs, "Oh, Lord, why did I go there?" Yeah, he gave a little place to Satan, and he went ahead and passed right on through and had another success in your life. 28. Let us labor. I love Ephesians 2:8. "For by grace you save through faith, and that not of yourself, it's a gift of God." And an awful lot of people stop right there. Because that's a good feeling. That's an easy one. God's given me grace. But what about 10? "Created unto good works." That's what I should be about. Created unto good works. He gives us more to think about. We need to speak edifying words. We shouldn't grieve the Spirit. 31. Put away evil in your life. There's another tough surgery. 32. Be kind, tenderhearted, forgiving one another. In the pit, Joseph was in a pretty sad situation. And many of us, if we didn't know how that story would turn out, would be pretty dejected. Would be worried, stressed. Where do I go from here? But I suggest that we do what Elisha told his servant. When we're looking, don't look that way. When you're looking for a solution and you've just arrived, Dothan, keep your eyes up. Look to where the real solution comes from. Oh, you're going to go to Dothan. You'll be there. How will you come out of Dothan? In what condition? I love David's comment here in Psalms 25:15. David says, "Make mine eyes ever look towards the Lord." Make my eyes ever look towards the Lord. Is eternity real? Is God's promises real? Are those at the heart of our every thought? Is this how you get through the day? To rest in the promises of God. And if I'm going to do that, I need to keep my eyes up. I need to be playing the game as God instructs me. I need to be thinking. As the writer there in Philippians 4, remember that list? What should we be thinking about? Things that are true. Things that are honest. Things that are just. Things that are pure. Things that are lovely. Things that are a good report. If there be any virtue, if there be any praise, brethren, think on these things, especially when the chips are down. Probably most of you didn't know my grandfather Long. I was privileged to be left his library. And in it, he had lots of notes. He was an elder for several years, served in the Kansas City area. He had one sermon that he'd worked up that was kind of interesting to go through. He developed a lesson on baptism based on three letters. The key pieces of baptism are a change in relationship, and he cited Galatians 3:26 and 27. Isn't it neat to go back and see somebody 40, 50 years ago teaching the very same things, using the very same scriptures? The gospel's the same yesterday and today, and forever, of course, as we stand before the throne of God. Sons of God through Christ, for as many as have been baptized into Christ have put on Christ. So there's that change in relationship. There's a change in the name. I'm now adopted into the family. And he says there's remission of sins. And he cites Acts 2:38 and Acts 22:16. You're familiar with both of those passages. But he didn't stop there. This was what was kind of interesting to me. Have you ever thought about the things baptism doesn't do for you? You ever thought about what baptism doesn't do for you? It will not force you to change your heart. There's nothing magic in the water. You're going to come out of there with the same heart that you went in with. Yes, the Holy Spirit is there to give you help that you didn't have before. But it will not force you to change your heart. It will not bring you to repentance. It does not remove the influence of others, and it will not keep you from sinning. Baptism is a wonderful door for us to pass through, to follow the Savior in the death, the burial, and the resurrection. But after we've gone through that, it doesn't seal us against sin. It doesn't seal us against stinking thinking. It doesn't keep us from looking at the world the way the world looks at it. It's up to us to continue to run the race, to press towards the tape, to throw off every weight that so easily besets us. Brethren, when we find ourselves in Dothan, will it mess up our day and cause our minds to go someplace they shouldn't go? Or while I look into the hills from whence cometh my strength, will I claim those promises that God has made to everyone that's faithful, who's named the name of His Son, and who's followed His commandments? And if you've not been baptized, then all the good thinking in the world won't help you a bit. There's an awful lot of good thinkers out there that are going to go to hell just because they've not bowed their knee. And could it be pride? I don't know. But tonight, if you have not named the name of Christ, all the great thinking to get you through the town of Dothan is going to leave you in the pit. And that pit will be turned to fire, and you'll stay there for eternity. Consider your situation tonight as we stand and sing the invitation hymn.